America is ready to get back to work, but to win in the new economy, you need every advantage to succeed. Smart companies run on NetSuite by Oracle, the world's number one cloud business system. With NetSuite, you'll have visibility and control over your financials, HR, inventory, e-commerce, and more, everything you need all in one place. Whether you're doing a million or hundreds of millions in sales, NetSuite lets you manage every penny with precision. You'll have the agility to compete with anyone, work from anywhere, and run your whole company right from your phone. Join over 20,000 companies who trust NetSuite to make it happen. NetSuite surveyed hundreds of business leaders and assembled a playbook of the top strategies they're using as America reopens for business. Receive your free guide, 7 actions businesses need to take now, and schedule your free product tour at netsuite.com/getup. Get your free guide and schedule your free product tour right now at netsuite.com/getup. That's netsuite.com/getup.
The ESPY goes to Jason McElwain.
Thank you, ESPN, for giving me this award, and thank you to all the people who voted for me. I would just like to thank my brother Josh for introducing me to the game of basketball. Also, my parents for their support. I would like to thank my friends back home in Rochester, especially my teammates on the basketball team. Most importantly of all, I would like to thank my loving coach for giving me the chance to play. Thank you, God.
Best of ESPYs is presented by Capital One. Tune in to the ESPYs presented by Capital One on Sunday, June 21st at 9 p.m. Eastern.
Meanwhile, on something completely different, Rob Gronkowski was on CBS's Game On last night, and he competed in rhythmic gymnastics. Neek and Dan, what do you think of the form here?
Good footwork. Good footwork. Not much flexibility. I'd like to see him use the hoop, honestly. The ribbon is, he's a little too big to use the ribbon in my view, but this is a nice start.
Liz, if you guys watched him be on Masked Singer as the White Tiger, you would understand why it looks this way. But the shorts are super tight.
Yeah, he goes for the Gronk spike at the end. I will say this, if you put me in that outfit and I turned sideways, you would not even know I was in the room. That's how incredibly skin tight that outfit was.
You can't unsee things.
Yeah,
you can't
unsee with things. That hideous visual now implanted in your brains, and my apologies, let's get up and go with the news of what is a very busy Thursday in the world of sports. And it starts with 6-time U.S. Open champion Serena Williams announcing yesterday she will play in this year's U.S. Open, which is planning to be played at schedule. At August 31st is when it begins in New York without fans. A lot of the top players in the world have said they're not coming, so it's significant that she is. A state appeals court in Florida yesterday granted Zion Williamson a full stay of a civil lawsuit brought by his former marketing manager. It means Zion will not have to answer discovery requests about improper benefits until after a federal case involving the same issues is resolved. The English Premier League returned to action yesterday. Teams and players showed their support for the Black Lives Matter movement by taking a knee in solidarity after the opening whistle, while the names on the backs of the player shirts were replaced with Black Lives Matter. And Cardinals quarterback Kyler Murray was asked whether or not he'll be kneeling during the national anthem for the upcoming season, and here's what he said.
I'll be kneeling. Like I said, I stand for what's right. That's the bottom line. You know, I call it like I see it, and what's been going on is completely wrong. So, I'll be doing, I'll definitely be taking a knee.
And then to baseball, where there was big news yesterday. After the commissioner and the executive director of the Players Association met the other day, the league sent the union a new proposal for a 60-game season with full prorated pay. And Rob Manfred said, at my request, Tony Clark and I, we met for several hours. We left that meeting with a jointly developed framework that we agreed could form the basis of an agreement subject to conversations with our respective constituents. Summarized that framework numerous times in the meeting, sent Tony a written summary. Consistent with our conversations, I'm encouraging the clubs to move forward, and I trust Tony is doing the same. All of this sounds great. Sounds like they're very close to getting a deal together. And then along comes Jeff Passan in the middle of the night to write a story that gets sent to me in which you're pouring cold water all over the optimism. Jeff, what is the latest?
I am the wet blanket in your life, Mike Greenberg. And listen, this is not exactly an impasse that we're at this point, but it goes back to the same issue that they've had with the March agreement, which is when they come to some sort of consensus, seemingly they don't agree at the end. And right now, they disagree with what happened at that meeting between Tony Clark and Rob Manfred. Major League Baseball believes that they came out of that meeting with a deal. Now, yes, that deal was contingent on Tony Clark going back and selling his constituency on the notion of a 60-game season. But they believe that that was something that he was going to be able to get done. Not so fast, my friend. Tony Clark went back to players and players are not having 60 games. They feel like this is right where they were, honestly, with the 72-game non-prorated offer that Major League Baseball had brought along. They want more games, which means more money as well as more baseball. So we're not quite stuck in the same place as where we were. This constitutes progress, but I don't know where it goes from here, because if the players come back and say, we want 70 games, we want 72 games, there is the chance that owners are going to say, you know what? Enough of this. We thought that we had a deal. We're just going to implement the season that we want because we have been bargaining in good faith. And because if this does go to a grievance, we feel like we're going to win.
So you're telling me that we're at a place that what constitutes good news is that they can't agree upon what they agreed upon in the meeting, right? So they met in a room and they left, and now they seem to disagree on what it is they agreed upon when they were in the room. And this is what constitutes good news.
I'm just
confirming
exactly
that I understand that.
I mean, Greeny, this is baseball. Where have you been? What do you expect? This is good news, because at least we are in the end game here. You see the dark circles under my eyes right now. You see how this thing has aged me by 10 years. It's been a couple of months at this point. And frankly, I'm tired of it. The players are tired of it. Major League Baseball is tired of it. It just needs to end. Like, they should have been playing 80, 90, 100 games. At best, we're going to get like 65. And so there has been between 20 and 40 or so games that have simply been frittered away because the two sides can't get together and figure out how to hammer out a deal. And it's unfortunate. I mean, it really is unfortunate that baseball doesn't find itself in this position, that baseball put itself in this position.
And that's well said. And as I told you, you thought you had good news, and then Passan comes on, and I'm telling you, it's not all that good. Jeff, thank you. The piece is worth reading. He's got everything up there that you need to know. But candidly, we just summarized for you. It's not all good news. Jeff, thank you very much. Let's get to the NBA. The players there have 6 days until a June 24th deadline to notify their teams if they plan on playing in the Orlando bubble. Yesterday, Dwight Howard explained the goals of the Players Coalition, which has suggested that resuming games could distract from the fight for social justice. And here's, we're going to read you bits of a statement that he released that said, contrary to popular belief, we are not attempting to halt the resumption of the season. Many of our fellow players are afraid to voice their concerns and are continuing to follow along with what they believe they have to. As radical as Kyrie may sound, he's 100% correct. We're no longer slaves. Every man has a right to transparency in order to make sound decisions. If any one of us chooses to sit, it has nothing to do with another player's right to play. Either way, regardless of what criticism and retribution we face, we still want to protect the players who are afraid to protect themselves. We will ask the uncomfortable questions that can lead us all to truth and unity. So I have Jeff Van Gundy ready to go this morning. And Jeff, it's always a pleasure to see you. Thank you. And you were a coach a really long time. And obviously, creating a unity, a harmony, whatever the right word is, amongst a team has always been a huge part of the coach's responsibility. These are such different times that I guess I would start by asking you, if you were a coach now and they do wind up playing in the bubble, which I think almost everyone believes they ultimately will, how would you begin it? Like, what would you do when you all first got there so that everyone could sit and talk and feel and all the rest of the stuff that it feels like needs to go on before anyone can consider playing a game?
Well, I think obviously a lot of that has been dealt with individually through Zoom calls, I'm sure, between coaches, individual players. I think when you get together, though, there needs to be a Carthoritic meeting where everybody gets to say exactly what they want about a whole host of issues. I think that's the only way to move forward, because remember, they haven't had a real team meeting where everybody is in front of each other for a very long time. And I think as long as you continue to deal with your team in a direct, honest, and transparent way, good things will come out of it. And I think the one thing every coach needs to caution themselves on is that you don't use, say, this is a distraction. There are distractions that get in the way of winning and losing. This is not a distraction. This is something that is ultimately very important to the individual players, to the teams, to our league, and ultimately to our country.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about, is that we use the word distraction as something that will distract you from your primary goal. In this case, winning the championship might be a secondary goal to all the other things that are happening. So it's just going to be fascinating to see how they wind up doing that. You know, Jeff, I've quoted you a million times in conversations that I've had where you once said to me, the relationship between the coach and the best player is the most important relationship in any team. If that relationship is good, you have a chance. In this case, again, under these extraordinary circumstances, how would you put into words the value of leadership amongst the players on a team, well beyond anything a coach can even consider?
I think it's going to be absolutely critical that your best players are aligned with the coach, driven towards winning, and have the mental fortitude to sustain themselves in what ultimately will be a very challenging environment. The enthusiasm and the drive of your best player has always been critical. It's never been more critical than in this resumption of a season under these circumstances, because I think the frustration with the bubble environment will really take hold 1 week after the teams get to Orlando, and the initial enthusiasm and excitement about being back wanes a little bit. That's where your best players have to come in and drive the team forward.
While I have you, I would be remiss if we didn't talk a little bit about basketball. And so as we talk about the best players, that, of course, always begins with LeBron. As you look at the landscape of where he is right now and where the league is moving, I've heard people suggest they think this is his best chance to win another championship if he's going to win his career. What do you think?
Well, I think it's certainly a great opportunity, and you'd have to say it his best chance now, because he's got a great team around him, a tremendous coaching staff. And I just love everything that this guy is doing, not only on the court, but in his life. I think he is the example that all can follow to say you can do more than one thing exceptionally well simultaneously. And I think James will be driven. I think his team will follow suit. I think they're going to be a tough, tough out. I think the Western Conference Finals that I would think would be between the two LA teams, I think it's going to be a riveting Western Conference Finals.
Well, help me, Jeff, because you understand this. And you know more about basketball than pretty much anyone I know. I'm trying to figure out in the environment in which they're going to be, how important will depth be? Will depth become more important or less important based upon the fact that there's going to be no travel? They'll be playing a lot of games in a short period of time, but the circumstances will just be so different than usual. The Clippers have so much more depth than the Lakers do. The Lakers may have the better players at the very top. Is depth going to be more or less important in your prediction based upon the circumstances?
Well, I think that's going to be due to health, going to be all based on health related issues. So, you could have a team that gets nicked up, I think, for many various reasons. And obviously then depth will be critical. But I think if everybody's healthy, I think it's always been a league about the best players, and the healthiest best players usually have the upper hand. And remember now, home court advantage, there is no home court advantage. So for those teams that are eyeing the championship, there's no reason to kill themselves in those regular season games because they're not fighting for anything of significance, seeding relatively unimportant.
And then one more. Someone asked me the other day who I would pick as a sleeper team. And so I went back and looked. This all happened so long ago, it's hard to remember. But since Zion Williamson started playing, the New Orleans Pelicans have been one of the best teams in the NBA. If they find a way to get themselves into this tournament, do you think they could make things interesting?
Well, I do like their team very much. And you're right, Zion has had a huge impact on that team. And when healthy, they're fast, they're long, they're deep. And they play really good offensive basketball. Alvin Gentry does a great job with that team, getting them to play together. I think my sleeper team would be Houston, in that they're really good. Everybody knows that. But Harden, Westbrook shooting, they're going to be a tough out. I'm fascinated to watch how every team approaches this initial 3 weeks, how they approach the regular season, and then can they sustain their level of enthusiasm and drive to play really good basketball as the playoffs progress. I don't know. Like, to me, this is not the 19-20 season. That season is over. This is a separate season unto itself. And I'm just going to be absolutely fascinated by the different approaches and how the different players respond.
I'm with you. Let's do this as often as we can, assuming they do get back to playing these games. Jeff, thank you so much. I always appreciate it.
You got it, Mike. Take care.
All right, we'll continue in just a moment. On the way, no love for Cam? Wait until you see a tweet that has everybody fired up, especially me. That's on the way. And then the latest from Oklahoma State, where the coach and the best player are reflecting on what has happened and what will happen next. That's on the way. This is Get Up on ESPN.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with GEICO. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
GEICO. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
We are back on Get Up, and Cam Newton is still out there in free agency. The former Panthers quarterback recently posted a video of himself working out with the Browns' Odell Beckham Jr. On our show yesterday, both Neek and Marcus Spears said they thought Cleveland could be a good landing spot for Cam.
This championship window is now for this team. This roster is built to win today. They're not going to be able to hold on to all this talent going forward. I think that Cam Newton could be a great insurance policy and maybe someone who steps in mid-year to take this team, this offense, to the level that I think we all expected it to be last year.
Foxy, just tell G to get out of his feelings. This football, this competition. If you want to know if Baker Mayfield is good, bring the guy in that can take his spot. He will either rise and be the guy that a lot of people think he can be, or he'll falter and Cam Newton will be starting for the Cleveland Browns.
That was just a little snippet of how yelled at I got yesterday for taking the completely appropriate position that if you draft a quarterback number one, your job is to develop him. The Browns have done a lot of things to hinder that development, in my personal opinion, and bringing in a superstar as his backup, who's probably better than he is anyway, is not a very good way to continue to develop a young quarterback. So, Neek, I see your face, but I'm going to let Orlovsky go ahead.
Okay.
I'm going to let Orlovsky weigh in because he wasn't with us yesterday. And I just have a feeling, because I told him on the golf course yesterday what he should say, that he's going to be on my side. So go ahead, Dan. Which side do you fall on?
Greeny, I fall on your side. You guys remember the movie Varsity Blues when John Voight, the head coach, takes James Vanderbeek, the quarterback, and he smacks him in the head and he's like, stupid, stupid, stupid. That's what I feel about this idea of bringing Cam Newton to Cleveland. Okay, first of all, are we 1 year removed from Baker Mayfield breaking Peyton Manning and Russell Wilson's rookie passing record for touchdowns? We're 1 year removed and all of a sudden that never happened. I'm not discounting his struggles last year. But his struggles last year were, one, being used in the wrong offense. making him play drop-back quarterback, which is not who Baker Mayfield is. Two, this team led the NFL, I think historically, in penalties. They had a head coach who said, I don't really care about my job, and I'm not going to coach penalties. Like, there was a lot of things that set Baker Mayfield up for failure last year. I'm not discounting that he needs to play better. For Marcus to say that they should bring in Cam Newton because you want to find out if Baker Mayfield's good, bring in his competition for the guy who could take his job. One, Baker Mayfield is not the guy that needs competition. He's the fiery competitor that Marcus says needs to tone it down. Two, if you want to find out if he's good, put him on the field. You don't bring in competition for him. I try to make this point to everybody. The backup quarterback's job, number one role, is to get the starter to play well, not to be a really good player, especially when that young player or that player is a young player at that position. The Browns' goal is not to just win this year. It's not to just get good quarterback play this year. It is to develop Baker Mayfield for the next 12 years. Don't just get a guy in that you think can maybe play
wrong
here.
You're both wrong.
No,
because you both said it.
There's no way, Dom.
You both said it. Okay, I just let you talk for like 3 minutes.
Let Nate, let Nate go. Go.
You said the Browns' job is to develop Baker Mayfield. That's not their job. Job is to win the Super Bowl. Greeny said off the top that Cam Newton is better than Baker Mayfield. If you think that's true, get him in there. He's better than Case Keenum for sure. Get him in there. We all know that Baker's tough. I think Baker's going to have a bounce back year. I don't think that Cam Newton's presence is going to hinder Baker's development. But I do know that this team will not be built to win a Super Bowl in 3 or 4 years. Whenever Baker gets to the player that you think he's going to be, they're ready to win a Super Bowl now or next year. And then the roster starts to fall apart. So bringing in Cam Newton on a low price is not going to hurt Baker Mayfield.
Let me get Graziano in here. He hasn't had a chance to say a word on this. And what are your thoughts on this? And in particular, I would ask, from the people you talk to, how directly connected, because all the people who brought Baker Mayfield in as the number one pick are no longer there in Cleveland, so how married to him are they from the sense you get?
The sense I get is that they are all in on Baker Mayfield, and remember, Andrew Berry, who is the new GM, was in the Cleveland front office when they drafted Baker Mayfield. He only went to Philadelphia for the 1 year, and now he's back, so he was involved in the decision to draft Baker Mayfield, and everything I've been told by people in that organization is that the front office and ownership and the new coaching staff are believers in Baker Mayfield, and they want him to be the guy going forward. I mean, we can argue back and forth. Obviously, Cam Newton has had the better career, is likely the better player, but the Browns' plan is to build a team around Baker Mayfield. They think they've done that. They feel like they've shored up the offensive line. They think he's going to be a very good player, and they believe in him.
So then I wanted, because we're going to run out of time, to show this tweet again, because it still boggles my mind. And Graziano wasn't here for this. I know, Orlovsky, I promise. I will get you back in on the other thing. But we have to show the Carolina Panthers tweet. This is real. The Carolina Panthers verified Twitter account yesterday posted this question. Choose your GOAT, obviously among Panthers legends, and listed as the options Julius Peppers, Steve Smith Sr., and Luke Kuechly. I had to look at it for 5 minutes to make sure I wasn't missing something, and then I looked at the responses, and everyone else responding was saying the same thing I was, which is, where the hell is Cam Newton? So, Dan Graziano, this strikes me as really evidence. All these people who went out and said, you know, the Panthers screwed Cam with the way they handled all of this. I wanted to give them the benefit of the doubt, but I tell you what, to me, this adds fuel to that fire.
It does. Look, Greeny, I think sometimes, like, my role on this show is to be sort of a journalistic voice of reason and say, like, well, here's what may be really going on behind the scenes, while Orlovsky yells things like the Cowboys hate Dak Prescott, and I try to bring reason to the discussion. But in this case, what are you doing, Carolina Panthers? That's insane to leave Cam Newton up. He's the most important player in team history. He's the best player in team history. He's the most memorable player in team history. To have watched and followed Cam Newton's Carolina Panthers career is to have lived through a 30-for-30 documentary about one of the most fascinating players in league history. If I ran the social media account for a franchise that Cam Newton had played for, I would never stop reminding people that he had played for my franchise. I can't even imagine what they were thinking when they put this out yesterday. Boggles the mind.
Golf clap, because I don't have time for any more, but that is exactly right and perfectly said. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Much more football as we go. If you would love to see Colin Kaepernick get another shot in the NFL, there is a head coach that has opened that window. We'll get into that and much more in a moment. Get up on ESPN.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your teenager to help around the house?
Okay, Mom, I emptied the dishwasher, vacuumed the basement, and folded the sheets out of the dryer.
Wait, what?
Oh, and next, I'm going to clean Mitten's litter box.
Are we in some kind of prank show or something? That's a camera, isn't it?
There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.
He has become a tremendous factor. Throws the ball accurately.
He does so many things so well above anyone else in the league. He
throws it from the deep ball down the field to the quick rhythm stuff. But really, the factor that truly separates him is the ability to get out and run and make yards running.
He faked out the entire stadium, and he runs it 56 yards for a touchdown.
Most difficult factor in football to deal with.
Colin Kaepernick has remained a free agent since opting out of his contract with the 49ers after the 2016 season. Yesterday, President Trump, who has been critical of Kaepernick's decision to kneel during the anthem, was asked if he believes that Kaepernick should get another shot in the league.
If he deserves it, he should. If he has the playing ability, his playing wasn't up to snuff. The answer is absolutely I would. As far as kneeling, I would love to see him get another shot, but obviously he has to be able to play well. If he can't play well, I think it would be very unfair.
So now, will there be an opportunity? That's the question. Chargers head coach Anthony Lynn, whose quarterback room includes Tyrod Taylor, rookie Justin Herbert, and Easton Stick, was asked yesterday about the possibility of bringing in Kaepernick for a workout.
That's something that's probably on the workout list. You know, I haven't spoken with Colin. Not sure if where he's at as far as in his career, what he want to do. But Colin definitely fits the style of quarterback for the system that we're going to be running. I'm very confident and happy with the three quarterbacks that I have. But you can never have too many people waiting on the runway.
You said Kaepernick is on the workout list. Does that mean you are going to work him out?
Well, I mean, we haven't made plans to work Cap out. I mean, okay. I mean, Cap is he was a starting quarterback, a Super Bowl quarterback in this league. I think it would be crazy to not have him on your workout list, unless there's other reasons why you shouldn't. But we haven't reached out. We haven't scheduled anything.
Okay.
No, we have not.
You know, if you Google the name Colin Kaepernick, almost none of the first things that come up have anything to do with playing football. And there is an endless list of understandable reasons why that's the case. But the result of it all, I believe, is that many, if not most people, have completely forgotten how good a football player Kaepernick was. Some may remember that he was once one play from a championship and maybe that he once ran for 181 yards in a playoff game, which is still the most by a quarterback ever. But there's a lot more than that. Cap was a great runner. Steve Young is the only quarterback in history with more postseason rushing yards. Cap was also durable. He made 53 straight starts for the Niners, which is equal to Joe Montana's longest streak with the team. And most of all, he was a very efficient and risk-averse passer. He has the fourth best interception rate in history. He's fourth. Tom Brady is fifth. He has the sixth best touchdown-to-interception rate in history. He's sixth. Drew Brees is seventh. And finally, Kaepernick's much-maligned final season was not nearly as bad as some people want you to believe. In that season, he had a better completion percentage than Cam Newton, more yards per attempt than Eli Manning, and a better passer rating than Phillip Rivers. All of this while his best receiver was Jeremy Curley. So here's where we are. Cap is only 32. That's younger than 15 quarterbacks that started a game in the league last year. Now, I have no idea what the impact of all the time off would be if he gets another shot, but once and for all, this has to be said. The idea that this guy would be fortunate to catch on as a backup has absolutely nothing to do with football, because he was always much, much better than that. Those are the facts. Now let's talk about it a little bit here. And I've got Dominique and Dan Orlovsky. And Dan, I feel like it's been so long since the conversation about Kaepernick had anything really to do with football that people generally forget how good he was. So I wrote that up and you put together a tape. Let's take a look at that.
Yeah, Greeny, to get a glimpse of what Colin Kaepernick was as a player, we only need to turn back to last year and watch what Lamar Jackson was for the Baltimore Ravens and their offense that they did stuff. First of all, see the tight end on the right, number 81. Imagine him as a slot player in the alley as a lead blocker. The Ravens played with so many people in the backfield, they brought him back. But he's going to lead block out to the front. Tight end on the left is also going to become a lead blocker. And then the tailback is going to be part of this zone read run game in between the center and the guard. Now, what they did with Lamar was give him an easy read off this linebacker. If that linebacker flowed out towards the sideline, well, this would just be a downhill handoff to the tailback. But the conflict becomes if that linebacker decides to attack the run game, well, now Lamar can put him in a bind and become the runner all the way down in between those hashes and follow those two lead blockers. Easy read for the quarterback. Took the league by storm last year. We saw so much of this on Lamar Jackson. Well, go back to what Colin Kaepernick was doing with the 49ers. They've got the backside tight end, the tailback is the run game, and now a slot receiver. And it's that same type of read for Colin Kaepernick. He's going to read that linebacker. If he flows out, well, he's going to hand the ball downhill to this tailback. Well, if the linebacker decides I'm going to attack the tailback in the run game, Kaepernick becomes a runner out on the edge. Easy read. You've got a lead blocker. That linebacker takes the run game. You've got a slot receiver blocking. Take that defensive end away, and now Colin Kaepernick becomes a big-time runner. This is what Greg Roman was doing with San Francisco and Colin Kaepernick, which is what he did last year with Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens. Cap's skill set is a perfect fit for what teams want to do in the NFL right now. The Seattle Seahawks with Brian Schottenheimer, the Houston Texans with Mike Devlin and their offensive line coach, the LA Chargers, the Baltimore Ravens. Kaepernick was balling like Lamar did last year.
Dominique, what do you think? We were looking through some of the teams and all. Do I have Graziano perfect? Dan, let me come to you first quickly before I get to Neek. What are you hearing around the league? We heard the comments. We just played them from Anthony Lynn. What are you hearing about the possibility that there are teams out there that will consider signing Kaepernick?
Not much, Greeny. And look, I think you hear a little bit more of what you heard from Anthony Lynn, what you heard from Pete Carroll last week or the week before, talking about, you know, it would be nice if he could get back in, that the protests were misunderstood at the time, and that people regret, you know, it's, well, I think regret was a word that Pete Carroll used when he talked about it. So I think you hear that, but I have not heard indications that there is strong interest from teams in bringing him in and working him out and offering him a contract. There's a lot at work here. Obviously, as you mentioned, the situation is fraught in ways that a typical free agent quarterback situation is not. And for better or for worse, that's been a big reason why teams have stayed away. 3 years away from football matters too. As long as they've kept him out, it's done him more and more harm, because now you have to go back 3-4 years to see the tape that Orlovsky is showing us that you're talking about to remind you how good he was. And we're in a market. We'll go back to the last segment. Cam Newton is sitting there still available, has played more recently, is a year and a half younger. If a team's looking to bring in a quarterback that can do all those things, they're probably going to look at him first. So there's a lot working against Kaepernick still.
So, Dominique, with all of that said, do you think he gets back in?
I absolutely don't think he gets back in, and it's not because of the play. I think that Dan did an excellent job bringing up that video and showing the Greg Roman connection. But I think the point that Dan just made is if you want to run something like that, you can bring in Cam Newton, who we've seen do this more recently. But I do think that it's somewhat unfair to kind of marginalize Cap's potential to only teams that run that sort of offense. I think that Cap, I see Pittsburgh the Steelers as a good fit for Cap, where he can back up Ben Roethlisberger and potentially be prepared to come in if something happens to him later. And we saw the Ravens prove not too long ago that you can go from Joe Flacco to Lamar Jackson in the middle of the season and become a playoff-bound team. So I don't think that it's impossible to bring Cap into a situation that does not highlight the running quarterback.
All right, we'll see if he winds up getting a chance. Guys, thank you. I'll turn my attention to our next story today, because there's a lot here in college football. Mike Gundy, who received criticism from his star running back Chuba Hubbard for a picture that surfaced of him wearing an OAN shirt, eventually apologized in a video message on social media. Now Gundy has spoken exclusively with ESPN about the shirt.
I didn't know that some of the stances they had taken. I didn't know that. But then you look at it and say, okay, I was a dumbass. I put the shirt on not knowing enough about the shirt. So that was my fault. The way the players feel about me and I upset them and broke their heart, that bothered me more than losing games. And that's the truth. But that's why now that as humans, when we make mistakes, the only thing we can do is admit we're wrong, own up to it, be humble, accept critical people, criticism, make it better and move forward.
I heard from Coach Gundy later that day. You know, we talked. We talked for about 2 hours. Eamon was in here. And he said some stuff. And, you know, I realized, like, some people may be ignorant in effect, and some people may just not understand, you know, what's going on or the seriousness of what's going on. And some people need to be educated. And whether I can't depict exactly what's going on with him or whatever, I'm going to do my best to educate him and do my best to make Oklahoma State a better program for all athletes.
Now, another layer has been added to this story. Former Colorado linebacker Alfred Williams played against Mike Gundy's Oklahoma State team in 1989, and he's been following this story, and he spoke to the Oklahoman about a memory from 31 years ago to which Gundy initially denied at the time. But here's what Williams said. He said, quote, "I remember that it was the first time that the University of Colorado beat Oklahoma State while I was there. It was a big win. It was a really big win. And I remember Mike Gundy called me the N-word. That's what I remember." Williams added, "I want an apology from him, and I want to see him have some growth. If he denies that he said that, I have at least 20 people who will vouch for what happened that day." So Paul Feinbaum and Dominique are with me here. And Paul, you have, of course, covered this sport on a daily basis. What is our reaction to all of this latest information?
Greeny, it's just one more story. It's one more news cycle that works against Mike Gundy. And, you know, I felt the other day before he went on the apology tour that he really needs to go. And I haven't changed that because I think there is always going to be something out there for Mike Gundy. And I just find it to be just absurdly unbelievable that he could be so unaware of everything that is going on around him and suddenly have this road to Damascus conversion the other day. And now he's listening and wants to learn. I just don't buy any of it. I'm sorry.
Alfred Williams said in it, and it was part of the quote there, that he doesn't want Gundy fired necessarily, but he does want an apology. Dominique, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is just another example that we give people the benefit of the doubt when they have a certain title or when they look a certain way, because it seemed to me that Chuba Hubbard is obviously much more informed on issues. And I think that Oklahoma State should be fortunate that they have a player like that there. But it's hard to believe anything that Mike Gundy says, because he also said that the One American News Network, the shirt that he was wearing, he liked them because they stick to just the facts. And if anyone has ever seen One American News or understand what they do, they exist only to be more conservative, if that's the word you want to use, or more right-leaning than and more radical than even Fox News. So it's hard for you to ever have watched that their programming or read anything about their programming, wear that shirt and not understand it. So I feel like that's not true. But I do think he's afraid about his football coaching future. And I think he'll do whatever he can to try to save that. Because if you can't get recruits and you can't get the players there to trust you or believe in you, then there's no reason for you to be a head coach in this league. And the last thing I wanted to point out is that Mike Gundy, while he, I'm sure, like to trumpet how much he has done to help out young black players by getting them to school, he doesn't really graduate them all that well. There's an article on the Undefeated from 2018, excuse me, that says that the graduation rate for black players there was 38%. Since then, it's got to, I believe, 48%. So it's gotten better, but it's still below 50%, and a great disparity between them and between the black players and the white players there. So if you want to do something for the black community, I could care less about apologizing for the N-word or saying that you see something different. Is you try to emphasize the opportunity that the black players have there and help them benefit from it, rather than supporting organizations that take stances in direct opposition to your black players and black people in this country in general.
And Paul, sort of as a final thought here, this is yet another example in an entirely different way, but with Chuba, of college athletes understanding the power and influence that they can wield and doing so in ways that we've never seen before, Paul, in all the years you've been covering the sport.
No, this is an unprecedented several weeks here, Greeny, and I think we're just going to see more of it. You know, Chuba, to me, has shown a lot more growth and maturity than the head coach who's supposed to be teaching him. And you even heard Gundy talk about that and Chuba talk about that. And I think it's going to spread around the country. And I think Nick said something there very interesting. This is going to devastate Mike Gundy in recruiting. I mean, he may be able to still pick up some recruits now, but I think long term, every single coach in America is going to use this against him, and I think they're going to be successful at that.
We'll see how it all works out from here. Again, we'll see when the reaction comes at some point today. Meanwhile, we have more Korean baseball for you tomorrow morning. We follow every day after they play. They're on tomorrow, 5:25 a.m. Eastern time on ESPN and the ESPN app. It is Doosan starting a three-game series with LG. And again, Get Up follows right here on ESPN. Coming up, wait until you see Dan Orlovsky's list of top five NFL offenses and the one team that he left off. It may leave you scratching your head. And it's been too long since we've done this. A little sneaky hembo time for Orlovsky. Which team led the NFL in total offense, the most yards, over the last two seasons? That's the question. The answer is next. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your baby to let you sleep in?
What? We could sleep in another half hour? Thanks, sweetheart. And you'll change yourself too?
There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.
All right, we are back, and Sneaky Hembo has one for Orlovsky. Here we go, Dan. Which team led the NFL in total offense, meaning most yards, over the last two seasons combined?
Too easy. Hembo knows my list, so I'm going to say the Dallas Cowboys.
Too easy. That's wrong. The Cowboys are actually fifth. The answer is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Tom Brady's new team actually had the most yards. And look, Hembo already quoting you on the pop-up this morning. Well, let's talk about great offenses and what we think are going to be them here. Raiders tight end Darren Waller seems to be very optimistic about his offense this year. He was on SiriusXM NFL Radio and said, I don't feel like having a top five offense is out of the picture. Now, it certainly would be a bit of a surprise. The Raiders struggled in the red zone last year compared to its first 5 years with Derek Carr, and that led to a significant dip in scoring. They did, however, rank top 10 in a few categories, including sixth in offensive efficiency, which was better than the 49ers, and they made it to the Super Bowl. So, Dan Orlovsky, without further ado, I would like you to put together this morning's list of the top five, what you expect to be the top five offenses in football this year. The floor is yours.
Yeah, the top five offenses in the NFL this year, I'm going to start at number five, and I'm going to say those Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Now, I expect them to struggle a little bit early on, but there's too much talent on this football team not to catch fire midway through this season with Gronk and Godwin and Evans. I'd say the two most important people outside of the quarterback on that offense are Donovan Smith and Tristan Wirfs. They're tackles. If those guys play really well, this offense should score 28 points a game or so. Number four, to the New Orleans Saints. Obviously, Drew Brees is back. They probably have one of the more diverse people, Taysom Hill-wise, when it comes to skill set and the things that they can do with him. We all know Michael Thomas is great, but now they have Emmanuel Sanders opposite him. They have a great tight end in Jared Cook, and Alvin Kamara hopefully stays healthy for them. That's going to be a very, very dominant offensive football team. Number three, the Baltimore Ravens. Listen, the Ravens are going to – they have Lamar Jackson. Yesterday I just sat down and watched Lamar Jackson highlights all morning. But the fact that they still have one of the better young tight ends in Mark Andrews in football, I love the addition of Devin Duvernay to their offense. I do caveat it with this, Greeny. Replacing Marshall Yanda and replacing Hayden Hurst are going to be very interesting narratives for me, but having the MVP of the league, that offense is going to be absolutely ridiculous. Number two, I'll go to the San Francisco 49ers. The 49ers had one of the best offenses in the NFL last year with a banged-up offensive line. You're talking about adding a receiver like Brandon Ayuk. They have Debo Samuel. Obviously, George Kittle is dominant. And I think Jalen Hurd coming back to that football team, their young receiver they took in the third round last year, is going to be a very, very impactful player for their offense. And the best offense in football last year, or this year, is going to be the one that was the best offense in football last year. It's got the best player in football, and that's the Kansas City Chiefs with Patrick Mahomes. They basically have everybody back in their offense. And then they added Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who I think is going to be their version of Brian Westbrook from the Eagles for Andy Reid. This offense is going to be almost impossible to stop if they stay healthy. So a ton of yardage in the air, a ton of yardage on the ground. Their offensive line is one of the better in football, and people don't respect it enough. But those are the NFL's top five offenses this coming season.
I like it. Bucks, Saints, Ravens, Niners, Chiefs. Dominique, is there anything missing?
You know who's missing. You left off Dak and the Cowboys. And it's hard to get all lathered up in an argument in this particular case because all those offenses, I could see them being pretty good, but there are question or being very good. There are question marks around the Bucs, and you mentioned it in those tackling. I do think that losing Travis Frederick is a problem, but the Ravens lost Yonda, and you still got them up there. They have gotten better talent-wise. They returned their offensive coordinator, who we all know you like and respect. They bring back that top running back, who was one of the best in the league last year, quarterback who was top three in the league by QBR last year. And if you think about what they did last year, it was even made even more impressive because they had such a bad defense. They were 30th in the NFL for offensive field position. Where they started their drives was almost the worst in the league, and they still ended up with a top three offense in the NFL. I don't understand how you can continue to insult Dak and the Dallas Cowboys, but you do because you're a hater. What did Dak do to you?
Dan,
what did he do?
Go ahead.
Now, listen, this isn't a hate thing. My point would be this. When Tampa Bay plays against a really good defense in the NFC, I think Tampa Bay's offense is still going to perform well. When Baltimore has to play against the Steelers, a great defense, I think they're still going to play well offensively. When Kansas City plays against I want to see the Cowboys offense have a lot of consistent success against good defenses. And a lot of people know they beat up on poor defenses last year. So I want to see them play consistently well against good defense for me. Because they're going to be really good. There's no debating that all that. But that's why they're not in my five.
Because you saw Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Bucs do that all last year. You saw that happen all last year with that team as it is currently assembled.
I have to leave it there, but I like it. I like the list, and I like Dominique's objection to it. Guys, I'm out of time. Thank you very much. By the way, reminder, tomorrow night's family movie night on ESPN and on the ESPN app. This week's film is Rookie of the Year. It's a 12-year-old little leaguer who has a freak accident that enables him to throw over 100 miles an hour, and then he signs with the Cubs, and that's when the fun begins. It's 7 Eastern tomorrow night on ESPN. Coming up, it's been something of a roller coaster week, to say the least, for Mike Gundy and his star running back, Chuba Hubbard. Chuba will be live with Stephen A. and Max on First Take coming up. They begin in 5 minutes right here on ESPN. Get Up is brought to you by Jeep. There's only one. And before we go, today is the 20th anniversary of one of the most dominant victories in sports history. And Dan Orlovsky is with me here. Tiger Woods won the 2000 U.S. Open by 15 shots. He was 12 under. Second place was a tie at 3 over par. Dan, how well do you remember it?
Oh, I remember it well. I've actually seen it a couple of times on Golf Channel, just kind of rewind. And I just remember everybody just getting beat up by the weather, right? The wind was just beating everyone's golf ball up, and Tiger was just puring everything.
Yeah, it was at Pebble Beach. And I'll say this, you've ever seen the famous shot of Secretariat running down the back stretch at Belmont and the jockey looking back to see if there's anybody behind him? That's what Tiger Woods should have been doing because there was nobody there. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow. First Take starts now.